Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Randomly Generated History Club, where three non-historians pick a year at random and try to learn things about it. I'm Will, and I'm here with my two friends, Anna and Ant.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
This week, we are talking about the year 1969, thanks to esteemed board member Patrick.
Yes.
Yay!
Who has used
His God-given
his divine right.
His divine right, purchased via Patreon, to, to select the year for this episode, which is a first for us. Mm. And I'd like, before we go any further, each of us to give a three-word preview of what we're discussing today. Anna.
My three words are, take that, Soviets.
Take that.
Mine is biggest ever festival.
Oh,
biggest ever festival.
Okay.
You can imagine what that might be in 1969.
Yeah, I got a fair hint. So we've got a...
Good.
There's actually,
biggest ever festival and a Soviet boy band.
Yes.
And mine is made TikTok possible.
Made TikTok possible. What? China? My sick dance moves?
This week, I am going to talk about ARPANET.
ARPANET. Oh, yeah. ARPANET. Of course.
Is that a man named Ralph Panett?
Oh, God. Oh.
You've ruined it. You've heard this. You've heard of this before. ARPANET is, in fact, can we be serious for a moment? The Advanced, the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network.
Yeah. Okay.
And this was the first wide area network that had distributed control rather than centralized control, which basically just all that means is that it's significant because it laid the technical foundations for what became the internet.
Of course, yeah. Didn't Al Gore do this? Was it Al Gore did this?
No, it was before. It wasn't one of the Al Gore ones. That's okay. No, that's that movie, isn't it? The Inconvenient.
No, Al Gore complained. He said that he made the internet.
Yeah, he did.
I think that's a famous quote.
He did not.
Yeah, true. His middle name is ARPANET.
It's his name. Alistair Richard Panett. Cool. Wow.
Okay, what is ARPANET?
So, first of all, without its existence, I think people listening would probably be unable to listen to the podcast, except, of course, for our small but loyal number of listeners who write to us each week and receive our legacy written newsletter, which, of course, is carried to them personally by...
Foxes.
By foxes,
yeah,
yes, exactly.
Little scrolls in there.
Messenger foxes.
Messenger foxes.
By messenger foxes, which of course is in the tradition of the fine tradition of the club. But for everyone else, you owe much to the internet and its predecessor, ARPANET. So first of all, ARPANET is the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network. Can you guess which project agency initiated this project?
I'm going to say NSA?
USA.
I mean, it's USA for sure.
Yeah.
Of course it's USA.
DOD.
So I'm going to give you a clue. It's the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network.
DARPA.
Projects Agency.
Okay,
that's
so
right. Yeah, ARPA.
ARPA.
Right? Okay, that was supposed to be a really easy get you in
you
thing.
Got us.
You've said the acronym so many times, and each time I have not internalized what words you're saying.
That's okay.
Okay.
Okay, so ARPA itself, it has a little sidebar on ARPA because it's fascinating. So this is a really interesting organization and it's probably worth exploring in some future episode. Hmm. But it was established by Eisenhower in 1957 after the Soviet Union launched Sputnik, which is the first artificial satellite. And at the time, this was something that completely blew the minds of people in the American establishment. And it caused quite a big scandal because... Well, not because they were shocked that you could put something into orbit, but just because they were shocked that the Soviet Union got there first and managed to do it.
And so their answer was to send nudes to each other across some campus, is what it was, which I'm assuming was the very first use for this.
Yeah, that's kind of just the American experiment in general. When in doubt, send nudes.
I mean, it must have still been faster to send them, print them off and send them in a vacuum tube, you know, like in those shopping centers.
It was foxes until the mid-2000s.
Of course, messenger foxes.
Yeah.
That's where the history of the term foxy comes from. That's why.
Messenger foxes carrying primitive
foxy
nudes.
Foxy pictures, they would say. Yeah. Right. Oh, that's a foxy pic.
I didn't know
There you go. That's where it comes from. Messenger foxes.
Fact.
This podcast is really useful for general learning.
So good.
So ARPA was established to collaborate with people from academia and industry and other government partners and to conduct research and development to expand the frontiers of US technology. And most of it was linked to things that would be helpful to help them maintain military advantage. Mm. But then there were also just lots of other things that they thought might be useful for wider American dominance in civil society. And technologies today, like the personal computer and weather satellites and mRNA vaccines most recently.
Don't think I could get by it one day without my weather satellite, you know?
It's, yeah.
It really has just changed my life on a daily basis. I do have a question, though. So this is the Advanced Research...
Projects Agency.
Is there like a sort of a simple... research project because I don't
where they were working on things like, you know, slicing bread.
I don't think my CV would pass muster for the advanced one, but if I could focus my time on like square blocks through square holes or something like that.
There's a basic projects club they have. So you could join that, and that's for people who get lower marks.
Yes,
I think. I think like you probably in their academic studies. But ARPANET was created to try and link up computers that by 1969 were increasingly commonplace around in academic research settings and in major corporations and across government departments. And it kind of makes sense, I think, that when you have this big, enormous mainframe computer thing in your organization and you're collaborating with another organization and you hear they now have a computer, one of the first things that you'll try and do is try and work out whether you can link the things up and get them to collaborate
better. To send nudes, to be clear.
to do the foxy nude sending.
Now, I have a question.
Yeah,
these computers, are we still in the era of punch card, big, a computer takes up an entire room, or are we in a smaller...
I think by... the late 60s, you were beyond punch cards for advanced computers. I think that's right. You'll know more than I will.
I think they still had a lot of punch cards. There's definitely cards that were punched.
Okay,
but the size of the punch got smaller and smaller over time.
Okay. We're not at personal computer.
Yeah, no, this
keyboards.
Is still
do you know where the term bug comes from?
Where the term burger?
Bug.
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 Bug. Computer bug. Bug in code. Oh. Do you know where it comes from?
No.
A beetle that crawled into a punch hole.
This is literally, that's almost exactly what happened. So early computers, I think it was in the late 40s, early 50s. I could be wrong. People can Google this. But when computers did run on punch cards and tape, and they would have to go in and try and work out what had gone wrong with the code, they would sometimes find literally insects in there. They found it, but after the first time they found it, it became the term for a problem with the code.
And so the insect bodies would occupy a whole punch area, and therefore the one would be a zero or the zero would be a one or whatever, and that would cause upset.
And that's why all tech companies to this date employ entomologists.
That's correct.
Yeah.
About two-thirds of the Twitter employees who were let go were in the entomology department.
Yeah, which I think history will show was a short-sighted move.
Oh, incredibly absolutely. Short-sighted.
Yeah. I mean...
So we're talking about ARPANET. And and the first successful... host-to-host connection. So the first real instance of ARPANET starting to work was made between people from the Stanford Research Institute and UCLA by a programmer called Bill Duval, and then from the UCLA side from a student programmer called Charlie Klein. and it happened at 10:30 p.m. on the 29th of October, 1969. And Klein typed the command login as his first command. But initially, the computer on one end crashed after he typed the first two characters. And then about an hour later, Duval went in and adjusted some of the parameters, and Klein tried again and managed to log in successfully. So as a result, the first two characters sent successfully over the internet were low. Hello, low.
And then if he tried it again, then the first three characters would have been LOL.
Wow.
Right? Because he started with login, right?
So to finish off, here's a question for you. ARPANET was up and running by, as we've discussed, end of October, November 1969. How long did it take, do you think, before the first illegal message was sent?
Oh my God.
And then second, what do you think was the crime that was committed with this first illegal message? So November 1969, it started working between, you know, two computers both in California.
I'm going to guess that it's probably like cheat. Like an exam paper that someone skimmed and sent to a colleague or something like that. I think
that's a good
guess. Or maybe piracy by sharing research that they didn't have a license for or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think it has to do, like, genuinely with sex. And I would say within 2 weeks.
Wow.
I'm going to say that very night.
That just reflects the levels of faith you respectively have in human nature.
Yes, low in levels nerds. Of faith.
Yeah, zero.
Hang on, and you think within 2 weeks, and what time frame did you think?
That very night. Like, literally, what was it, 10:10 at night?
Straight into academic.
He sent LO, LO, and next thing you know, he was downloading episodes of Game of Thrones.
Okay, so I don't know what it is about the world that's corrupted the way you see humanity, but it wasn't actually until 1973.
Oh, okay.
And I'm afraid the crime was pretty lame. So it was someone who was requesting the return of an electric razor they'd left in the UK after a business trip, and it was a crime.
Why is it a crime?
It's a crime because it was sponsored by the US government, and it was therefore official US government research
razor.
Purposes only.
Oh.
And so to frivolously try and communicate a message just for your personal reasons was actually a crime.
Oh my
so,
God, that is about as lame a crime as you can imagine.
Probably is. Yeah. I thought it was an official razor that he lost or something.
Yeah, he had lost the government science razor.
Well, the president always carries around that
the presidential science
launch code
razor.
And his presidential razor.
Yeah, that is what's in the briefcase.
So there you have it, though. But fortunately, there haven't been, I don't think, any crimes committed on the internet since then.
So.
No, I think that's fine. Yeah, I think it's all been smooth sailing.
Well, it had to be smooth with the razor back in the right hands. You know?
Uh-huh. Fair enough.
Okay. There you are. ARPANET.
ARPANET. Well, my story actually kind of follows on from that, because you mentioned Eisenhower and 1957 and Sputnik and all of this stuff, which is convenient as I'm talking about the space race. I know.
Not heard of it.
Yeah, so I get to do the moon landing because I'm the only one of us who can do a JFK impression.
I am so excited.
Is this actually going to happen?
It is going to happen. And I mean, I just wanted to set expectations. It's very bad.
Yeah, well, of course
it will be bad.
I think it will be better than either of yours.
You know, you've not done it yet, so you can just not do it.
I have to.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to happen later. I'm not just going to do it now. You're just going to
Do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
between now and then, I'm going to try and find my Jeff.
Yeah. I think you can dig deep and you'll have it. Okay, so I mean, everyone knows the broad strokes background of the space race. As Will said, in 1957, the Soviets launched Sputnik, and it really kicks off in earnest. In 1960, John F. Kennedy is elected, and he makes it a big push. In 61, he commits to putting a man on the moon by the end of the decade. And in 1962, he doubles down on that in his now famous speech at Rice University.
Here we go.
Which sounded a little something like this.
Wait, are we just going to cut it here and then insert the original audio?
Yeah, I think we should do that, yeah.
Yeah, okay, no, I'm going to do it. I've committed to it. All right.
Maybe we should do your one and then the original audio straight afterwards.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Yeah. I'm going to do this.
So,
and you'll have to decide which is which, and you won't be able to tell.
You won't tell them which one you think Anne is.
Okay,
now
listen. Okay, you're about to hear two speeches with the same words. One of them will be Anna, the other one will be John F. Kennedy.
Right
in. Decide.
Yeah, right in.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Okay, and...
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
So for my research this week, I did...
okay.
You didn't have to do any of this, but I'm so proud of you.
I know.
So
I just, I really wanted to. So after that speech, public opinion was actually still really against Kennedy, probably because of the accent, which I just did flawlessly. Most people thought it was a colossal waste of money. Someone even referred to it as a moondoggle, which I love.
Oh, that's good.
But Kennedy persists and even suggests some joint U.S.-Soviet missions, which is cool. And that did eventually happen in 1975. But back in the 60s, both sides are starting with uncrewed missions. So they send non-humans into space. Monkeys, mice, turtles, guppies, guinea pigs, frogs, wasps, beetles, and 12 dogs, famously starting with, you know the name of the first dog in space?
Oh, ooh. Yes. This is such a good quiz question.
Her name was Laika.
That's the one.
Yep.
How do you teach a turtle radio voice procedure?
Slowly.
Right.
Yeah. In 1961, the U.S. sends the first chimpanzee into space, and his name... It's a popular sandwich topping.
Buzz Aldrin.
His name is Ham.
Ham. Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
Not Coronation Chicken. and then in April 1961, the Soviets send the first human, who was
Yuri Gagarin.
There it That's is, the Yuri Gagarin. And also, this is a thing I had no idea about. The French sent a cat into space.
Oh, I did not know that.
I didn't know the French sent anything into
space. Well, that was because that's a tradition, isn't it? It was the scape cat. The once a century scape cat.
Every year since Louis XIV.
That's right.
Well, he had to learn from the turtle, of course.
Yeah.
You know, there's an exchange program which helped him out.
So the Apollo program kicks off in 1961. This is the third U.S. human spaceflight program following Mercury and Gemini. Apollo missions use the Saturn rockets, including the Saturn V, the tallest and most powerful rocket that has ever existed. And in my opinion, one of the coolest things to have ever existed in the world ever. It's awesome.
They let Ham in there.
Ham wouldn't have been on an Apollo mission.
Okay.
In 1968, Apollo 8 carries out the first human trip to the moon, does 10 orbits around before returning to Earth. Apollo 9 is the first flight.
Can we just put allegedly into a bunch of this? Just please. The jury's still out.
Yeah, really, telling a story. Yeah, okay, it's up to you to decide if it's fiction or not. I think
I know what I've decided.
Yeah. So Apollo 9 does the first flight with a full Apollo spacecraft in May 1969. Apollo 10 performs a full dress rehearsal without, the crucial final bit, which is not a great dress rehearsal, but hey, they got pretty close. And so now we're at the big moment. It's July 1969. Apollo 11 launches from Florida, from Cape Kennedy or Cape Canaveral on the 16th of July, and then reaches the moon on the 20th. And they guide the lunar module Eagle down to land on the surface of the moon.
Allegedly.
But one thing I didn't know is that even though at this point it's pretty clear that the Soviets have been beat, they're still going. So on the 13th of July, just 3 days before Apollo 11, the Soviets launched Luna 15, which was a robotic probe that was supposed to go down and scoop up some moon dirt and bring it back to Earth before the Americans.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay, good job, you got dirt first. But we're sending humans, so checkmate. Anyway, it failed. It crashed into the moon 2 hours before the Americans left the surface to return to Earth.
I did not know that.
I know. Yeah. So there was a different spacecraft on the moon at the same time, allegedly, as the astronauts.
That's so cool.
So, the two Americans who landed on the moon or who walked on the moon were, of course, Commander Neil Armstrong and lunar module pilot Edwin Buzz Aldrin. But do you know the name of the command module pilot?
I do.
Oh, you both do?
Yes.
Great. Say it
Michael
at the same time.
Collins.
Good job.
Agreed.
Correct.
That's great. That makes me really happy because I feel like he always gets left out.
He does.
I mean, he was literally left out. He had to orbit the moon alone for 21 hours while they were just goofing around on the surface.
I think he went back later. Did he go back later? I think he did.
Yeah, but I don't think he ever walked on the moon. I think he just went back to fly it again. Okay. He really liked being alone. And boy, howdy, orbiting the moon. Yeah, is about as alone solitary. As you can get. Yeah.
Did he bring his guitar for any moody music?
He was just playing Wonderwall the whole
on
time.
On repeat. Oh, yeah.
So here are some moon landing facts for you. There is the famous...
One. Didn't happen.
One. It's all a hoax. You know, it's always one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. But of course, Armstrong always insisted that he said one small step for a man. Mm. And that the audio is just too grainy to verify that. But researchers who had a lot of time on their hands analyzed recordings of conversations from 40 people raised in Columbus, Ohio, which is near Armstrong's hometown of Wapakoneta, Ohio, and found that they typically blended the words for a, so they sounded like fra. So... Because he just had an Ohio accent, he could have said one small step from man. And we don't know what it was. Yeah. So I guess that's that.
That's great. Why you would have thought that most people at that moment, I mean, I know he's got a lot on his mind. He's probably also a bit worried about, you know, what happens when I step on the moon. Right?
Yeah.
A little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, is it going to open up and swallow me whole?
Yeah. Or just something, but yeah, bad happening. But you would have thought you would just take your time and say whatever your clever thing you've thought of.
Yeah.
Nice and clearly.
What would you say? What would your first words be?
Holy shit, I'm on the moon.
Pretty good. And the whole world listening.
The whole world listening, which is why, I wouldn't probably say that. They nailed it.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they did. They landed on the moon and got back.
What would you say?
I would actually just be eerily quiet and then just wait until like the whole world is on the hook and then just like, just scream and run back into the thing and just claim there's monsters and aliens there.
Yeah, it's just a terrified scream.
Terrified scream as I exited from the soundstage in Hollywood.
And you run out onto Sunset Boulevard.
I think
Boulevard.
I just say, wake up, sheeple. And take my helmet off and breathe the actual oxygen-rich atmosphere that is the Earth.
Absolutely. Here's another fun fact is the astronauts reported that moon dust smelled... And they said that it smelled like wet fireplace ashes or the air after a fireworks show.
Amazing. I would have that candle in my house. No problem. Yeah.
Wet moon dust.
Wet moon dust.
So they'd kind of clomped it in on their boots and then brushed it off and they smelled it in the like capsule. But by the time they landed, the smell had disappeared. Mm. So we just have to take their word for it.
Interesting.
They tasted it as well. You'd be tempted just a little. Like,
I don't know. To lick moon dust?
Well, no, you wouldn't lick it. You'd do the classic like 70s cop show, rub it on your gums kind of thing.
Oh. You know? Oh, yeah. The moon actually has insanely high traces of cocaine.
Oh, it must do. Why do they do that? This is an aside. Like, it's clearly a bag of cocaine. You don't need to rub it into your gums.
Yeah, but what if it's salt? That would be fun.
Well, who's smuggling kilos of salt up there? whatever. You know. Okay.
You know, I've never been in the specialist crime division of the Miami Police Department, don't you?
I don't know why I'm asking you then.
Yeah, I don't know why
you're
asking
wearing
me
a leather jacket, aviators, and put your gun and your badge on the desk. And why do you keep claiming you're too old for this shit?
All right. So in total, 24 U.S. astronauts have traveled to the moon. 12 have walked on its surface. And a small vial of ashes from the body of lunar scientist Eugene Shoemaker currently reside in the crater named after him. Mm. The only human remains on the moon.
That we know of. That's so interesting.
And because I would be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about the conspiracy theory, I did read the entire wiki page listing all of the theories, and there is just such an overwhelming amount of evidence to disprove them.
Yes, it's crazy.
Yeah, but my favorite one was not about the flag or the sun or whatever, but that a woman in Perth, Australia, said that for 2 or 3 seconds, she saw a Coca-Cola bottle roll across the lower right quadrant of her TV screen while she was watching the moonwalk.
And no one else saw that.
No one else saw that.
Eagle-eyed.
But she, you know, she disproved it. And you've got the flat earthers who think that it was a movie directed by Stanley Kubrick. Yeah. The Hare Krishnas think the landings were faked for a variety of reasons.
This is true.
And some of the reasons why they think it's fake is because they think the moon is farther away from the Earth than the sun.
That's madness.
Yeah, and the other one is that the god of vegetation lives on the moon and would never allow someone to land.
There's... Okay.
This is real. This is not me making it up.
I'm really...
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Know that. Do they know that they're wrong?
Well, they don't, because they think they're right.
Someone really should tell them.
And then just to close it out, I have some poll numbers from what percentage of people think the moon landing was fake.
Oh, this is going to be depressing.
Yeah. It's both more and less depressing than you'd think.
Okay. So I think when you look at these polls, about 10 or 11% of people think like any kind of crazy stuff. Yeah, I reckon with this one, because it's quite well known, it'd be more. Maybe like, I think
30%.
I think 17%.
Okay. Will, you're closer. In America, polls have ranged from between 6 and 20% of Americans. Yeah. In Russia, mm-hmm. Ant is closer. It's 28% in
really?
Russia.
Really? I guess because the political messaging and stuff.
Yeah. And pretty damning for the British. What do we think?
Oh, is it worse?
Is it worse than the UK?
It's worse than the US.
Oh, okay, so 25% then.
It's 25%.
That's so sad.
25% of British people think
one quarter of our listeners, statistically speaking,
think we didn't land on the moon.
No, I'm going to go unequivocal.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sorry. Actually, no, our listeners are not like that. Listeners to other historical
podcasts. I'd say we have a bias towards conspiracy theorists. Yeah. So it's probably 100% of our listeners.
I think our listeners are perfectly representative of all the people on Earth
in
every possible way. So from the age of 0 to 115, all languages and cultures and all sets of beliefs.
We do tend to aggressively target the demographic of top 75% people. Exclusively. So
we don't want any bottom tier people working in the Basic Projects Club or whatever it was called.
The Basic Projects Club.
So that was 1969 when we absolutely 100% did land on the moon, allegedly.
Yes. Nice one. So good. There is one small
step
conspiracy
for mankind.
Theory that has probably got some groundings in truth was this theory of the lost cosmonauts. Have you heard of this?
No.
So this was that the Russians were so desperate to get into space first that Yuri Gagarin may not have been the first person to get into space, but is the first person to survive getting back into Earth. So
interesting.
There is theories.
No
that,
way.
That they had such poor regard for safety that they just chucked rockets
up. But what about all the people involved in launching those rockets and recovery? Like, they wouldn't like able to cover that up.
I don't know about the humans part, but there is documented evidence that the Soviets only gave names to the missions that succeeded.
Yeah.
So there's like Luna 1 through 15, but there were actually 15 other Luna missions that didn't succeed, and they didn't want the world and also the rest of the Soviets to know that they had failed, so they only named them if they'd been a success. So the Lunas were all uncrewed. I don't know about any manned flight, but there's at least some truth.
I intend to take the same approach with any children I have. If they aren't successful, they don't get names.
You just give them numbers until they get their bachelor's.
Tell me, come back when you've learned how to sword fight and I'll give you a name. I assume that's the number one criterion for your children.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. It is.
So good. Cool. Well, today, my three words, as you may remember, if you have a memory that lasts over 20 minutes, was biggest ever festival.
Yes.
Ooh. So, 1969.
Here we go.
This year contains the Summer of Love.
Yeah.
And this episode, I'm actually going to cover off one of the biggest ever events that ever happened.
Yep.
But it didn't happen in the Summer of Love. That would be Woodstock. We're not going to talk about that.
Oh. Yeah.
Small thing. This happened in before the Summer of Love in the lesser known Spring of Regret. and as an aside, it really is a shame they stopped naming the seasons after the winter of discontent in 1978 with the strikes, you know.
Yeah, the autumn of fungus. <Ennui. laughs>
So in the Spring of Regret, in a small university town in Fargo in North Dakota.
Wow.
We come across the hero of this tale, a chap by the name of Chuck Stroop, which is a great name. So Chuck was a student of the North Dakota State University there. And he was a frequent writer and contributor for the student paper, The Spectrum. And it was coming up to spring break, and he wrote an article lamenting the fact that spring break was coming up and he couldn't afford to travel from North Dakota to Fort Lauderdale or one of these other places where people used to go to chug beer, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't fair that other universities were closer And, you know, why can't you just have spring break anywhere? And if we all just agreed to go somewhere instead, we could just have a cool, fun time there.
Because March in North Dakota is famously the same as, like, March in Cabo.
But isn't spring breaks... Do people coordinate where they go for spring break in America?
Well, there are like big party towns. Yeah,
can I just confirm, is spring break just what we would call like Easter holiday, half term?
Yeah.
When does it happen?
It's usually in March. Okay, I think yours are a little later and they're pegged to Easter.
Right.
Yeah. Ours is just like, it's just a thing. It's your break. It's your mid-semester break.
Is this when the basketball happens?
I think the basketball happens like near
No, there's like a college basketball thing.
Yeah, it's March Madness.
Is it the same time?
Yeah, the NCAA tournament. That would usually end right around when spring break would start.
Got it. So that's just another thing that happens in March.
Yes, March is a busy, busy month for American universities.
Wow.
Okay. So anyway, Chuck, he decides to post this idea in his article that if everyone just descended on one point and party there for a weekend, they can have their own North Dakotan spring break. And
he's suggesting people from North Dakota come and do this?
Yeah, they all just
so not everyone own... across the country.
Yeah, exactly. At this point. So he chose a town called Zap in North Dakota, Z-A-P, population 210.
Ooh, megalopolis.
Absolutely. It's a tiny place. It's on the Knife River. The etymology of the name is unknown. It might be after a banking family or a town in Scotland. But no one cares because there's nothing notable at this town except for its name. It had one bar, one restaurant, and a church, and it was absolutely not set up for a festival. Anyway, the festival was called Zip to Zap, a Grand Festival of Light and Love.
Oh, love it.
It's a good name.
It
it's
is
a great
good. Name. Zip to Zap, I mean, yeah.
It is great. And Kevin Carville, another hero, was the editor of the newspaper, and he kind of kept up this joke, and he made mock advertisings about it. And one of the ads that he posted is the following. And it's sort of a blurb about this festival. And it says, located in the valley of the scenic Knife River, Zap, Zip 58580, has thrown open its arms to students. The beautiful burg's 250 residents welcome them to their shores. Shall we say no to this truly fine gesture of Western hospitality? Of course not. On May 10th, we and students like us will flock to Zap, the Fort Lauderdale of the North. Where do you get your tan? Florida? No, the Knife River. So that was Kevin's editorial. Anyway, the article was published and it gained some like local notoriety and like, you know, as a hilarious jape, all these students saying, hey, isn't it so funny as a thing. But it did actually get picked up by the Associated Press.
Nice.
And this was in the sort of midst of like, you know, the establishment versus these hippie students, anti-Vietnam sentiment. And it was an article that was, you know, lamenting like hippies are destroying America and that part of that narrative. And the students were going to mob this town and destroy it in this peaceful countryside place. So this article was syndicated nationwide and it had the opposite effect of what they were intending to do.
Mm.
It basically just gave it marketing and it spread like wildfire and students from across the country were now in on the joke.
They were sending their messenger foxes to campuses.
Zipping all over the place.
Oh,
the
town. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And you think this the locals might not be happy, but they were actually pretty excited to bump to the local economy. So the mayor was involved, all the rest. And they were all very excited. And they decided to prepare in the best way they knew how. So one, they bought a load of beer. Check. And then one of the locals donated a cow to barbecue.
Nice.
And the local ladies prepared beans for lunch on the Saturday when the festival was supposed to start. And
cool. So all boxes checked.
Yeah.
Everything prepared
beans,
and ready to
beef
go.
Beef and beer.
Yeah. But also they invented the Zip Zap burger. And there was some toy company that made a Zip Zap toy, which if you look it up, it's like a long, stretchy string of elastic with like foam around it. And you kind of hold it between two people or something. And it kind of basically looks like construction waste they just wanted to get rid of and make a buck on. It's just completely insane.
Okay.
Anyway, the festivities aren't supposed to start until the Saturday. However, 3,000 students show up on the Friday night.
Wow.
Yes. And there's only like what, three public toilets in the entire town, including
that.
The church.
Yeah.
So 3,000 show up on the Friday and commence to absolutely slam the tiny bar called Mike's. All the 12 seats were full. And the crowds were just completely overflowing into the streets.
Oh my God, this is such small town America. I love it. Really is. Yeah.
The mayor was there in the bar as well, hosting. He's like, oh, this is a great little festival. But then he was Mayor Fuke. His name, colloquially known as Mayor Puke as well. By
nice.
The students
nice.
The but he exits the pub after, like, you know, doing his mayoral show
puking.
Up and do all that kind of stuff. And he is immediately beset by the scenes of, like, student revelry and chaos there. There's a bonfire going, just hordes of unwashed hippies. You couldn't move for, like, flares and beads and like, yeah, shag pile rugs. Anyway, he panics, as all leaders should do when faced with slight inconvenience.
when faced with, like, perfectly harmless 18-year-olds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he calls the governor for backup.
Oh, geez.
And that's when the National Guard roll into town.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the National Guard around this time, not such a great name for breaking up protests, etc. like that.
Yeah.
But this was actually very peaceful. No real violence or injury or anything like that. It's very, very peaceful.
But hang on. So there's just like a large student party.
Yeah.
And he's called in the military.
Yeah.
This is madness. Yeah.
Well, 3,000 people overwhelming a town of 210. I mean, like.
But what do you mean by overwhelming? They're not ransacking anywhere, are they? They're just sort of being there.
They're just kind of like hanging about and stuff, you know, loitering, I guess, you know?
Infestation.
Yeah, yeah.
Get them out. I mean, we covered America's greatest religion of capitalism with the stupid stretchy bits. and now our second greatest religion, which is the military.
Yeah, exactly.
So you got to have both of them.
And they've run out of beef at this stage, obviously.
And that's our third. So that's really where the crisis happens.
Yeah, exactly. But the guard, you know, they got on great. They're just kind of standing around looking a bit stern. But some of them were joking with the students saying next year when this happens, they're not going to show up in uniform. They'll just come and join in the party. but the crowd does disperse. But there's a massive amount of them that still want a party, and they're moving around to the neighboring towns, like just these zombie hordes. And like these neighboring towns are like getting calls on the phone or whatever and saying, oh my God, the students are coming your way. And one of the towns, they were all so scared, they set up a picket line and they raided there and they bought out from the hardware shop every single pitchfork, hammer, like staff and everything, like bags of nails, whatever it was, to try and form a protective barrier around their boring town.
But these are just children who want a good weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah.
What's going... This is
They must be punished.
Exactly. Thank you. But the students didn't go to that town anyway because obviously you don't want to...
Because they heard people were armed with hammers.
And bags of nails.
And
which
bags
I think is...
of nails.
Yeah. Anyway, the local state radio station, very famous in North Dakota at the time, was called KFYR.
K-Fire 101.8.
That's the one. But they were into the joke, and they've been like amping this festival up for weeks as part of the running gag. Oh, make sure you go into the, you know, to the festival and all the rest in zap, zip to zap. But what they were doing is they were actually coordinating where the hordes should go next, because they would then publish on the air that everyone was listening to in their car saying, oh no, the students are all centralizing in Williamsburg where the beer is 50 cents and blah, 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 whatever. So they were effectively like telling the students where to go next. So they were coordinating
nice.
This. Because they were sort of in on, they were trying to get like sponsorship and like, you know, get their DJs and whatever into the parties and that kind of stuff. So eventually the state sort of kind of gave in and they're like, right, we just can't have these hordes of students just running around the place. So rather than play whack-a-mole, they set up a party venue in a park in Bismarck, in the town of Bismarck.
The capital of North Dakota.
Yeah, the capital of North Dakota. And they like, just said, hey, everyone just go here. There's a stage, there's DJs, face painting. The whole lot was there.
Sorry, how long is this, like, over what period of time?
Three days.
Okay.
So Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wow, okay.
I think 9th, 10th, and 11th of May 1969. So they went there. They had a great weekend. Probably a lot of people, you know, taking acid and all that kind of stuff that they did, having fun. Wouldn't know anything about fun, so I'm sure it was great.
Yeah.
But it's gone down in the annals of North Dakotan history as the only student gathering that has been broken up with the National Guard, and still to this
good
record. Yeah.
It wasn't like those students did anything to remotely warrant the deployment of an armed force against them.
It got pretty close, though, with the great science club uprising of 1985.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
I guess maybe just as a few sort of follow-ups and addendums. Kevin Carville, who was the editor, you know, people were like baying for his blood, but he'd actually resigned from the paper before that.
No,
his last day
Kev.
Was actually the 10th, and he'd handed in his notice previously, and he dropped out of college because, you know, he was a total partier, it turns out, and didn't go to class very much. He just worked in the paper and gave up, really. And it just got out of hand. And one of those instances where the fear-mongering actually was responsible for, like, I guess, mongering the fear.
Funny how that will happen with the fear-mongering.
Yeah. And there's no clash, no deaths, anything like that, no real injuries that I could discover. North Dakota State University did pay a fine, but otherwise it's kind of remembered as this fond, weird quirk of just something kind of going viral before. Yeah.
What do we monger?
Knowledge.
Shoes.
Shoes. Shoes.
You're a shoemonger.
Yeah. I've been secretly selling shoes.
Have you?
On every episode.
I've been getting some tweets.
Yeah.
That explains it.
People are listening.
Okay, great.
And yeah, that's it. That's the biggest festival that happened in 1969.
Yep, that's the only one that I care about.
Yeah, Woodstock or whatever, but who cares about that?
Who cares about it? No one has ever thought about Woodstock since. No, and people talk about Zip to Zap.
All the time.
Nobody's business.
This is, I think, the dumbest combination of things we've chosen from a year so far. Like, this is
the moon landing.
Fine,
excuse you.
But it's just the juxtaposition.
So
what you're saying is I'm the dumbest one here, and I've chosen the dumbest thing, and the two of your smart things are good. Is what you're saying? So
I chose the internet, and Anna chose the moon landing, and you chose a party in North Dakota over a weekend with a few thousand people.
And I'm the better for it.
It happened in 1969, and those are the only rules that I abide by.
The one rule.
That's the one rule. It doesn't say
we have at least adhered to the rule this time.
It's not the randomly, you know, generated good history podcast. I'm sorry, tune into those guys. if you want
there
good history.
There's plenty of good podcasts out there.
Yeah. I loved learning about Zip to Zap.
Thank you, Anna. I appreciate you.
Thanks for joining us. That's everything you'd ever need to know about the year 1969. And if you have any questions or comments, you can find us on Twitter or visit our website, randomlygeneratedhistory.com. And I'd just like to say a thanks to Patrick, our esteemed board member, for selecting the year 1969.
Excellent choice.
And if you'd like to pick a year as well, you can do that by going to patreon.com/randomlyhistory.
Very exciting. Yeah, thanks, Patrick.
And now all that's left there to do is to blow away the plumes of dry ice smoke and take the random number generator out of its case and boot it up and get the next year.
Hold on, I'm not wearing my ceremonial robe.
Oh, yeah. Well, Jesus, do you think you should be prepared for this by now?
Okay, it's on. It's on. I'm ready.
Okay, it is paddling over to us with its land paddles. The rich, rich smell of wet ash.
Wet ash.
As it approaches. And I'm booting it up.
Oh.
And
so bright.
It's just a redolent of fireplace.
The next year is 1933.
Okay. 1933.
Okay. Yes. Well, yeah. Something God, a lot of 20th century stuff going on these days.
Oh, yeah, there is actually.
Oh, I think that's great, though. That's famously good. A historical century.
Yeah, this is great. This is very recent. This is the most recent genuinely randomly chosen one.
Genuinely randomly chosen one,
69
yes.
was not genuinely random. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it was generally chosen. We didn't know what it was going to be until he chose it. Mm. But yeah, this is the first procedurally generated one.
Patrick used his judgment.
His random judgment.
Cool. Great. Exciting.
Great. See you next time for 1933.
Sweet.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.